legal adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
Well, one major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the herb.
Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator. Radical Russ Belville.
Oh, yeah. Good day, Tokers and Tokettes, and welcome to a very special Wednesday, May 2nd, 2012. And it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for being here with us. We are going to have ourselves quite the show. Lots of news, lots of interview stuff to get to, especially today's special guest coming up at 4:30. We are speaking live with Stephen D'Angelo, the CEO of Harborside Health Center and the star of the recently canceled series on Discovery Channel, Weed Wars. He'll be our guest for two segments. So Dr. Mitch Earlywine will be off today, unfortunately. I know everybody's a little sad about that, but we'll bring him back next week to take all your questions on cannabis science. Also joining us to bring us all of these headlines coming up in the news today, right after this first break, is Cannabis Carrie, our senior news editor. How you doing, Carrie? I don't have a Cannabis Carrie. I know she's out there somewhere, but she'll be bringing us all sorts of headlines today, including a horror story where the DEA in San Diego locked up a celebrant from 420, a college kid who was celebrating 420, locked him up and forgot him, handcuffed for 5 days. It's a tremendously disturbing story. We'll also bring you video from that story as well. What other stories do we have, Carrie?
Also, a new survey out today that shows teen marijuana use is up, way up. And I've written out the specifics of the Oregon Attorney General race. Very clear choice for cannabis community members, I would say.
All right. I also have some bad news to bring you from our home state of Idaho. We'll get to that in our hemp headlines. Then at 20 after, we take our break and we come back with Daily Toker Tunes. And for today's Daily Toker Tunes, we are going to go to NorCal Perps down there in the Bay Area, who's going to bring us some music video from Catch a Fire. So this will be good stuff to check out. I'm sure Wiz Calico, who's out here on the end table, will enjoy that. Welcome, Wiz Calico, to the show.
Oh, aloha. I will love that. I always love some Catch a Fire.
We've got some new Dan Michaels audio that will be debuting in hour two, and Toker Talk Radio will also take your calls at 971-533-7111. So plenty of stuff. Also tonight, later on the Normal Network, live at 8 o'clock Pacific, we'll have the Irie Island Hour. Calico, what are we looking forward to for that show?
That's right. We're going to try something a little different this week. We're going to have a themed show where I'm going to play nothing but slightly stupid tracks. Some of my favorites, I mean, they have like 8 albums. I'm going to be playing as much as I can, as well as previewing some of the videos from their new DVD they're set to release that they recorded at Bob Weir's Tri Studios just a few months ago. So we'll be looking at that.
So it's Slightly Stupid Night tonight
on
the Irie Island Hour. All right, folks, and stay tuned. We got all that coming up here on the Normal Network. We're all recovering from May Day. I hope you're doing okay, too. Stick around. It's Normal Show Live.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
The Global Marijuana March is an annual free rally held at different locations across the planet. It refers to cannabis-related events that occur on the first Saturday in May or thereabouts and may include marches, meetings, rallies, raves, concerts, festivals, and information tables, depending on the city. Here in Dallas this year, since the big day falls on Cinco de Mayo, we're calling ours Cinco de Mota, Festival and March. Sure, mota is Latin American Spanish slang for weed, but the name acknowledges more than just Cinco de Mayo. The name is also a grim acknowledgement from our community of the more than 50,000 Mexican lives that have been lost since President Felipe Calderon launched a massive military crackdown against the cartels in 2006. Texans want to see an end to the drug war and the violence associated with marijuana prohibition across the world. Join us as we celebrate for legalization and the rights of all adults to consume cannabis responsibly. We'll have food trucks, speakers, live music, vendors, fire spinners, prizes, and of course, the march. The plan is to build a party around the march to turn it into a legalization celebration at Dallas City Hall. The party starts at 2. The march is at 4:20. Help us promote the event by clicking the like button below.
Yo, what's good? This is Be Real of Cypress Hill chilling on Normal Show Live. Legalize it.
Hi, I'm Radical Russ. One of the best things about marijuana is the wonderful aroma. But when you travel a lot like I do, that aroma becomes a suspicious smell. That's why I endorse stealth-products.com, the leaders in smell-proof containers. From smell-proof vacuum bags to smell-proof backpacks and duffel bags, all the way to smell-proof digital safes, stealth-products.com has you covered. Stealth-products.com brings you safe, secure, odorless layers of protection with activated carbon fiber. Backpacks and duffel bags are simple black so as not to attract attention with a logo or a flashy design. Now, nothing is perfectly odor-controlled from the detection of drug dogs, but with proper vigilance, containers from stealth-products.com will help you avoid nosy humans.
You're now listening to Elliot Beats.
Stealth-products.com. Stealth-products.com.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
We're going to start today off with a story that has gone viral on the internet that comes from NBC San Diego. A college student that was detained by the DEA after a 420 raid suffered a harrowing ordeal that lasted almost a week. Danny Chong is a 24-year-old college student who said he is forever changed after the incident. DEA officials raided a home on the night of April 20th, where they say they found 18,000 ecstasy pills. Chong was there at a 420 party, but was not involved. He, along with other people from the party, were brought in for questioning, but Chong was never formally arrested or charged, and agents told him he was free to go. One officer even offered him a ride. Now, the details of how Danny Chong ended up in a cell after that aren't clear. He was locked into a 5-by-10-foot windowless enclosure without any water or a toilet. Although he says he screamed, cried out, and repeatedly kicked the door and the walls as the days passed, no one ever came to check on him. Without any food or water, he was forced to drink his own urine to survive. He reported to NBC that he could hear noises from the agents from inside his cell, but apparently they couldn't hear him. And as the hours stretched on, Chong descended into madness and at one point broke his glasses with his teeth and carved the words, "Sorry, Mom," into his arms. Agents finally found him 5 days later because they heard noises coming from the cell. Danny Chong had begun to eat his glasses and was barely coherent. He was taken to the hospital where he was treated for a perforated lung from the glass he had swallowed, and his kidneys were failing. He spent 3 days in intensive care. Chong is reporting that DEA employees looked confused and nervous when they found him and rode with him to the hospital. They have also taken care of all of his medical bills. This morning, DEA San Diego acting special agent in charge, William R. Sherman, extended his deepest apologies to Mr. Chong, saying he was troubled by his treatment, that it was accidental and isolated. Sherman has personally ordered a review of all the policies and procedures. Now, the incident has also caused Chong to miss his midterms at his university, and he says that his perspective on life has changed so much, he doesn't even know if he can go back to school. He's obviously considering a civil lawsuit, and we're speculating that he could probably get awarded millions, so we're going to go ahead and go to the video.
Let's go to the video on this, and then I'll give you my commentary.
NBC 7 first reported Chong was detained at the DEA office on Saturday, April 21st, following a drug raid at a University City apartment, where Chong admits he was smoking pot with friends. But he says agents told him he wasn't under arrest and even offered him a ride home. Hours later, handcuffed and alone inside a small, windowless holding cell, Chong wondered why he was still there.
Since that's so inconceivable. You keep doubting that they forget you.
But that's exactly what happened. Those hours turned into days. All the while, Chong says he could hear DEA workers and other detainees walking by his cell door.
I kicked the door many, many times. Even my neighbors, I guess, were getting annoyed at me and telling me to shut up. And I hallucinated by the third day, and I was completely insane. And by that time, I was just trying to get my sanity back. I didn't care if I died. I just wanted to make sense of things.
By day four, the lights had gone out. Thirsty and starving. In total darkness, Chong says he tried to commit suicide by breaking his eyeglasses. He used the sharp edge to carve a message into his arm.
Trying to write, "Sorry, Mom," but I couldn't even aim, so I gave up on that one.
On day five, agents finally opened his cell door. Suffering from signs of kidney failure, Chong was rushed by ambulance to Sharp Memorial. On the way, he told an agent what he'd been through.
Everything that I said, he was just like, oh my God.
Now, yesterday we told you that a small bag of meth was found inside Chong's cell. Well, his attorney, Gene Iredale, says that that meth did not belong to Chong, that Chong actually found it inside a blanket that was inside the cell, and he actually ingested some of it because he was simply starving. Meantime, Iredale says he is now putting together a civil lawsuit against the DEA. That's the latest from here. Reporting live at Kearney Mesa, I'm Tony Shin, NBC 7, San Diego.
This Chong should definitely be seeing a couple of commas in his bank account. If I don't see a 8 or 9 figure settlement for this guy, then I've lost all faith in our justice system, what little faith I had remaining. It's just horrifying to think that not only would you be locked in, and folks, a 5x10 windowless room. If you stick your arms out, your arms are usually about as wide as you are tall. I'm 6 foot tall, so a room thinner than this, right? About this wide and about twice as long, windowless, no toilet, no water, no food, no human contact. This amounts to torture. This amounts to what we put people through in Abu Ghraib. This is despicable. And let me follow up with some of the reporting on this that I've been, as I wrote this story up. And remember, this was to bust an ecstasy ring, supposedly. 18,000 pills of ecstasy, rounded up a bunch of college kids at a 420 party. Nothing they would have done at that party could have possibly been as dangerous as anything this kid went through at the hands of the DEA trying to stop him from using these drugs. I got the another story here that referred to the DEA's San Diego acting special agent in charge, who's named William R. Sherman, who said in a statement Wednesday he was troubled by the treatment of Daniel Chong and extends his deepest apologies to him. Sherman says the event is not indicative of the high standards to which he holds his employees. He says he has personally ordered an extensive review of his office's policies and procedures. Troubled, you say, Agent Sherman. The only words I want to hear out of your pie hole are, "I resign." When someone is tortured and left for dead in your offices on your watch, it's not enough to pass the blame onto some underling who may not have followed through with your high standards. Continuing on, another former federal prosecutor, John Kirby, spoke with NBC San Diego and said he's familiar with the holding cells at that DEA office. He told them that this incident is inconceivable because every detainee is processed and it would be hard to get lost in the shuffle. Quote, "You talk about whether they might have done this intentionally. No way, because somebody's career is done over this," said Kirby. "So it was an unfortunate accident, huh? Look, if this were a murderer or a rapist or an arsonist who'd been forgotten in a cell, it had been awful, but it might have been an accident I could have some sympathy for, because at least you would have initially been placing him in the cell for the purposes of protecting society from a bad guy. But in this event, you locked up a college kid who was partying to protect him from himself. Yeah, somebody's career ought to be done over this." And that starts at the top with Special Agent in Charge William R. Sherman. And it rolls downhill to every underling on duty that night who handled Daniel Chong and ignored his days of cries, screams, and kicking and pounding on the walls. Yeah, walls where you could hear only one way, right? One way wall. He could hear them, but they couldn't hear him. Bullshit. They could hear him screaming and crying. And they just thought he was just some doper, some druggie, and figured that it was somebody else else's problem. I want to see 8 or 9 figure settlement on this. I want to see Agent William R. Sherman resign in ignominy and have to move off to freaking Antarctica to live with himself.
An interesting attorney general race is heating up in Oregon State between two very different candidates. The job is to oversee the thousands of laws in the state of Oregon, but one law in particular has been defining the difference between the two candidates from the same party. Ballots for the Democratic primary have already been sent out, and the race is essentially between the two Democrats, since no Republican is seeking the position. So all alone, Democrats will get to choose the state's top lawyer in the May 15th primary in Oregon. The choice in the race could not be more clear for the cannabis community. Dwight Holton was a U.S. attorney for Oregon and approved raids of marijuana grows that were legal under state law. He has publicly called Oregon's medical marijuana law a train wreck. Bob Wolf, who is the head of the Citizens for Sensible Law Reform, a group that is currently gathering signatures to try and get marijuana legal in the state of Oregon through a ballot initiative that would amend the state constitution, called Dwight Holden's stance on medical marijuana out of step with his own party on the issue. Holden has established himself as a tough-on-crime supporter of law enforcement and has indeed won the endorsements from most of Oregon's sheriff and district attorneys. He has been on record numerous times complaining that Oregon's lax marijuana regulations make it too easy to get a card and give traffickers cover to grow marijuana that ultimately ends up on the black market. Holton's opponent seeking the same position of attorney general is retired Court of Appeals Judge Ellen Rosenblum, who has said recently on a public debate between the two, she thinks the 55,000 citizens that use medical marijuana legally deserve a safe place to get it. She's also stated that marijuana enforcement in general would be a low priority under her leadership if elected. Holton slammed that position, saying that he would, quote, welcome a conversation about how to do this better and how to meet the will of the voters better, but added, I'll gladly enforce the law. Some background on the two Democratic candidates. Holton, who is 46, has been a federal prosecutor for the last 15 years, first in Brooklyn, New York, and then transferring to Portland, Oregon in 2004. Holton's father, Linwood Holton, was a Republican governor of Virginia, elected in 1969, and his brother-in-law, Tim Kaine, is a former Democratic governor of Virginia and a chairman of the Democratic National Committee. Rosenblum, who is 61, joined the Oregon Bar in 1975 in Oregon and has painted Holton as an outsider, pointing out that Dwight Holton only joined the Oregon Bar Association just 3 years ago. Now, here at Normal, we can't tell you who to vote for, but larger turnouts usually favor our cause. So I will just encourage you, if you live in the state of Oregon, please mail in your ballots by May 15th. Every single vote counts, especially in this very important race, so please send your ballots in now.
I completely agree with Carrie, and I got some more Oregon news for you in Toker Talk Radio in Hour 2.
And a new survey result put out by the anti-drug lobbyists, formerly known as the Partnership for a Drug-Free America, now calling themselves the Partnership at Drugfree.org, says that teen marijuana use has risen sharply over the last few years. The nonprofit group is best known for their 1980s and 1990s This Is Your Brain on Drugs ad campaign aimed to curb teen drug use. They released a survey today that said 1 in 10 teens said that they smoke marijuana regularly. Now, this is an 80% rise in the past month reported use among teens since the last survey the organization put out in 2008. The partnership at drugfree.org, along with MetLife Foundation, says that during that same time frame, prescription drug use has dropped slightly, but still remains high. They got the results after polling by anonymous questionnaires 3,322 teenagers in grades 9 through 12. The teens were polled at school from March to June of 2011. The current partnership president, Steve Peserb, blames the increase partly on the mindset of parents that a little weed or a few prescription pills isn't a big deal. He said that parents are scared about cocaine and heroin and that those are the drugs that they warn their children about. He said the group survey has shown that the use of harder drugs among teens has actually stabilized in recent years. The percentage of teens that smoke marijuana at least once in the last month rose from 19% in 2008 to 27% in 2011. And the percentage of regular users, those that used marijuana at least 20 times in the last month, went from 5% in 2008 to 9% last year, an estimate of 1.5 million teens toking up, according to the partnership. They say that teens who smoke 20 or more times a month are more likely to have substance abuse problems later in life. And they also report that kids in that heavy user group of more than 20 times a month are also twice as likely to use ecstasy, cocaine, and crack.
The children!
My God, won't somebody think of the children?
Yes, Dan, won't we think of the children? Look, folks, this is not a case of more kids smoking pot. This is a case of more kids admitting to smoking pot. It's now become okay to talk about it. It's okay to let folks know you're smoking pot. I mean, they contradict themselves. They say kids that smoke pot this often are more likely to use heroin and meth, and yet heroin and meth rates haven't gone up. I mean, your own data contradicts what you're saying here.
Well, what do you think about a break? We need to get ourselves in the right mood here.
No doubt. I'm a little enraged. Let's mellow out. We'll be right back after this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
I'm Sub Cool from Team Green Avenger. At TGAGenetics.com, we are working on the leading edge of medical strains. Our strains are rigorously tested for THC, CBD, THCV, and other critical cannabinoids. Know your grow. Check out our genetic diversity at TGAGenetics.com, the home of Jelly Bean, Jack the Ripper, Vortex, and other award-winning cannabis strains.
I want the people to know that they still have 2 out of 3 branches of the government working for them, and that ain't bad. Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORMAL, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we get tunes for Irie Wednesday, our celebration of that mellow vibe we find in the best of reggae, ska, calypso, and Latin music. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, folks, welcome back, and we're getting all the phone lines arranged right here. Coming up in just about 7.5 minutes, we'll be speaking to Stevie D'Angelo, the CEO of Harborside Health Center, and the star of the Discovery Channel series Weed Wars. But first, we've got to get to our 20 after tune. It's time for our Irie Wednesday Daily Toker Tune. And for that, we turn also to the Bay Area for Kyle, a.k.a. NorCal Perps. Kyle, how you doing there?
Not too bad. How you doing today, Russ?
Fantastic. I could use some Irie music. I hope you got something for me.
Oh, yeah. We figured it was about time now that we got this nifty new video feature that we featured our friends from New Zealand, Catch a Fire.
Oh, we love Catch a Fire.
So a little background on them for the people who haven't been listening to the show very often. They were first formed in 97 as a Bob Marley tribute band. They've toured the world, and they actually just finished up their U.S. tour. So if you want to see when they're going to be back, you can check them out at catchafire.co.nz.
Yep, and that's with a K. So Catcha, K-A-T-C-H-A-F-I-R-E, Catch a Fire. Check those guys out. Great music from New Zealand. We play them a lot on the Irie Island Hour, one of Coleco's favorite groups, I know.
Absolutely. And now I'm into so many New Zealand bands because they're all over the place. But Catch a Fire was the original for me, most definitely.
All right. So let's get right into it. Thanks, Kyle, for the tune. This is Catch Fire with Sweet As, the official music video right here on the Normal Network.
Sweeter every day. You turn my switches on every single way.
Every single way.
You got me tripping on your roots, eh?
Yeah.
I've got your love, I feel. You're my only remedy.
Only remedy.
No matter what the time of day, I'm gonna stop what I'm doing. Tracking edge away.
I'ma show you what we're gonna do. You got me saying ooh la, la la, la la, yeah. Ooh la, la la, la la, yeah. It just gets sweeter every day. Stay with me. Now there's no need to search and find. Your love could stop my heart. It's like I've been drinking wine. The color of our world soon gonna shine. Yeah. I'll be a lifetime love, no pressure, take your time.
Take your time.
No matter what the time of day, I'm gonna stop what I'm doing. Show you what we're gonna do. You got me saying ooh la, la la, la la, yeah. You got me saying ooh la, la la, la la, yeah. It just gets sweeter every day. Show you what we're gonna do. You got me saying ooh la, la la, la la, yeah. You got me saying ooh la, la la, la la, yeah. It just gets sweeter every day.
You got my love every day.
Every day.
You got my love everywhere. You got my love every day.
Tasting and most potent pot brownies possible? Do you consistently seek out recipes that will elevate your marijuana-infused cuisine to the highest levels imaginable? Then it's time to pick up a copy of the official High Times Cannabis Cookbook, published by the world's most trusted name when it comes to getting stoned. Packed tight with more than 50 recipes for eerie appetizers, munchy meals, high holidays, stoner sweets, and cannabis cocktails, along with expert advice that demystifies the experience of infusing marijuana into butter, alcohol, and various oils, this book will get you cooking with grass in no time, with special treats inspired by Willie Nelson, Snoop Dogg, and Cheech and Chong, plus all the info you need to stay safe when making and consuming edibles. You will truly learn how to bake a ganja cake and eat it too. So look for the official High Times Cannabis Cookbook wherever finer books.
Legalization, decriminalization, lowest law enforcement priority, medical marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that interact nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement in prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now, we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our Normal Show Live Cannabis Conversations.
All right, welcome back, folks, for a very special interview. I'm so happy to have our next guest here. He's one of the longest and most dedicated cannabis activists out there. You know all about his work on the Weed Wars series on Discovery Channel. And of course, he's the CEO of Harborside Health Center, the world's largest and I would say most professionally run dispensary in, like I said, in the world. It's Steve Angelo. And Steve, welcome to the show.
Russ, I'm so happy to be here. I hope you're doing well.
I'm doing fantastic. It's great to have you on the show. And I want to get to business first. Of course, we've got we've been covering your story and the federal government's overall crackdown on medical marijuana in the Golden State and other places in the United States, and their use of tactics that, unlike the Bush administration, which had come in and just, you know, with guns a-blazing and big old stanchions and so on, would come in and try to just take over a place. We instead have tactics that are trying to use tax laws here. And in this case, the tax law is this IRS 280E code, a code that was originally invented to go after crack kingpins and cocaine lords in Miami in the 80s, now being used against legitimate Prop 215 authorized dispensaries such as yours. And I know that you're part of trying to educate people about this. There's a big seminar coming up this weekend, and I just wanted to give you a chance right off the bat to tell everybody all about it.
Sure. I'm going to be in Los Angeles this weekend, and the big event is on Saturday, May the 5th, 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. at the W Hotel on Hollywood Boulevard. Myself, Henry Wykowski, who is the leading attorney on 280E subjects, and Hank Levy, the leading CPA, will be presenting strategies for medical cannabis businesses and the professionals who are advising them to most effectively defend themselves against this attack from the IRS that you described.
So for folks that might not have the business acumen to understand what all this 280E stuff is about, tell them how that affects you as a business and why it makes it kind of impossible to be a legitimate business if this is put into effect.
Yeah, you know, what the IRS is doing is trying to tax us out of existence. They're not trying to tax us. They're applying standards to medical cannabis businesses that don't apply to anybody else. And basically what they're trying to do is tax us on our gross revenue rather than on our net profit. And what that means is that the amount of tax that we would owe the government is more than we would have left over to be able to pay them with, and we would be taxed out of existence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like we said, it was something that was meant to go after, these are like RICO statutes, it was like something that was meant to go after drug kingpins, it wasn't meant to go after, medical marijuana as we know it. Let's give them, is there a website where people can get more information to attend this seminar on May 5th in L.A.?
Yeah, that would be 280ereform.org. 280ereform.org is the website. You can learn more about it. One more time, 280ereform.org. I'm also going to be delivering a free lecture the day before, on Friday, May the 4th, from 2 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. at Plummer Park in West Hollywood, where I'll be describing my 40-year journey through the cannabis reform movement.
All right. And speaking of that journey, the most recent step on that journey we all got to be a part of, if we had cable, or found it on the internet somehow, the Discovery Channel show, Weed Wars, was there four episodes? Was that the run?
Yeah, there were 4 1-hour episodes, Russ.
And we're just wondering, because, you know, we reported on the fact that they didn't renew the series, and it kind of perplexed me. And I was wondering if Discovery Channel ever told you why.
They did not tell us why. And the one thing I know is that it wasn't because of the number of eyeballs on the screen. Their biggest show, Moonshiners, drew 1.76 million. We were a close runner-up with 1.36 million. Mm-hmm. So whatever it was, it was not because people weren't watching the show.
Do you note any irony that those are the two top shows?
Well, you know, I think it shows what American people are interested in.
There we go. Entrepreneurial spirit, I suppose. All right, let's get to a little bit of controversy, because on the Weed Wars show and leading up to its promotions on both the right, you know, on the Fox News channel, and on the left, on the MSNBC News channel, you and your brother Andrew were quoted as saying some things about recreational use, and more specifically that you didn't support the legalization of marijuana for recreational purposes, or cannabis, I believe you probably said. I just want to give you the chance to explain that statement and the reactions to it and how you feel about it.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, some of what was put out over the airwaves was really distorted, and some of it was a result of us misspeaking. So, for example, on the Bill O'Reilly show, which is a very intimidating show, my brother Andrew said that he didn't support the idea of legalizing cannabis for recreational purposes. Well, what he had really meant to say was something that he had heard me saying, which was, we don't advocate legalizing cannabis for recreational purposes. The reason for that is I think that the terminology legalization and recreational purposes is really problematic and sets our cause backwards. Of course, myself and my brother both believe that there is absolutely no justification for any criminal penalties against cannabis. The idea that anybody should ever be arrested anywhere for using cannabis in any way for any purpose is an assault to any reasonable set of ethics. So we support ending all criminal penalties for cannabis for all people at all times. That said, we also believe that if you go to the American people and talk to them about regulating cannabis instead of legalizing cannabis, if you talk to them about using cannabis for wellness purposes rather than recreational purposes, it's our feeling that we'll be able to get this horrible assault that we are enduring right now over with much more quickly.
Okay, so in these remarks, the way they were taken by many who've written on in the cannabis community and myself as being kind of a distancing from trying to get Harborside distanced from the legalization movement so as to assuage the fears of or the coloring of the case that might come up with 280E. Any comment on that?
Yeah, I don't take my political positions because of they're going to deliver a certain economic return to me. I articulate the political positions that I believe in because I've had 40 years of experience in this movement, and I think I've developed a good idea of what works and what doesn't. And what I saw was that in the early years of this movement, when I first came in, our use of the term recreational cannabis allowed the Reagan administration in the 1980s and the Bush administration after that to really demonize cannabis and say that what we are advocating was a hedonistic society where people would be sitting around and getting stoned all day. And they built up this specter, this idea that, you know, school buses were going to crash and planes were going to fall out of the sky and our GNP was going to get on. And it was all because people were going to be sitting around smoking pot all day. So our challenge as a movement, they were very effective with that, right? They managed to undo years of progress that we made in the 1970s. And from basically, you know, 1980s until 1996, you saw very little forward motion in the movement. And I think it's because they were very effectively able to paint this specter of a stoned nation. So, you know, for somebody who uses cannabis on a daily basis and believes that there's nothing wrong with that, I found the need to find a way of explaining that, right? I'm not sitting around just getting high and getting blotto every day. Yeah, I use cannabis every day, but I'm using it for wellness purposes. It may be to relax. It may be to deal with a pain issue I have or get a better night's sleep or just to enjoy listening to a piece of music or making love. But for me, all of those are legitimate wellness uses. And I think that when we explain, you know, exactly how and why we use cannabis, how it benefits us, what it brings to our lives, that people who haven't had experience with cannabis are much more likely to accept it and embrace it. When we say we're getting high or we're getting stoned, to people who don't have experience with cannabis, they imagine it's something like doing heroin, sitting around nodding all the time. And so I find that the wellness explanation really helps open up the eyes of people who just don't understand what cannabis is really about.
All right. We're speaking with Stephen D'Angelo, the CEO of Harborside Health Center. I want to remind everyone that there is a 280ereform.org website to check out for the May 5th LA seminar on the 280E taxes and the tax issues. Stephen, I just want to get back to that point, though, about this wellness uses, because one of the problems that I see with that is there are people who are using cannabis and not using it for wellness purposes. There are people who do abuse it, and it is not good for them in their lives. What shall we do with them, and how do they fit into this semantic distinction?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, at Harborside, we recognize that a couple of things. First of all, any psychoactive substance can and will be misused by a certain number of people. And so I think it's important that we set up a model of cannabis consumption that is responsible and that is balanced. And when you talk to people about using cannabis for wellness purposes, it gives them a framework in which to understand and use their cannabis. You know, one of the things that surprised me was that after my thoughts about cannabis and wellness were publicized and I traveled around the country, several young people came up to me and said, you know, Mr. D'Angelo, they call me Mr. D'Angelo, it's kind of weird. You know, Mr. D'Angelo, after I heard your speech about wellness and I read your piece, Wellness Not Recreation, I started thinking about how I use cannabis. And I realized, you know, I was getting up and I was doing wake and bake and I was getting stoned before I studied and I wasn't always using it in a good way. And I started reconsidering and now I'm smoking less, but I'm getting more out of it. Well, you know, I never thought that me talking about wellness and cannabis was going to result in young people altering their consumption patterns. But that's one of the things that happened. So I think that, you know, the very fact of looking at cannabis through a wellness prism helps people stay away from problematic consumption patterns.
So semantic distinctions aside, do you believe there is such a thing as recreational use of cannabis?
No, I don't believe, I mean, if in the sense of what you're talking about is that simply by ingesting cannabis, that is a recreational experience. No, I think that cannabis can help relax you so that you can make the transition from a work mode into relaxation mode and thereby be able to engage in recreation more easily. It might alleviate aches and pains that you have that might prevent you from doing some recreational activities. But for me, recreation isn't something that you consume. It's not a substance that you swallow or smoke or rub on your skin. And it's an experience. It's an activity. So you can ingest cannabis and then engage in recreation. But I don't think that it's accurate to say that simply by ingesting cannabis, you are engaging in recreational activity. You can ingest cannabis and engage in a wide variety of behavior.
Okay. Does that explanation work for alcohol and cigarettes?
No. You know, there's no such thing as an endo-alcoholic system or an endo-tobacco system.
So
but every human being has an endocannabinoid system.
True enough. So people who are, I'm just trying to understand how this fits in this framework. People who choose to consume alcohol and tobacco are not engaged in recreation and they're not engaged in wellness. So what are they engaged in?
Consumption, ingestion of a substance.
Okay. So all right, that's it. Okay. Let's leave it at that because I could go for a while on this subject, but
let me just say one other word,
sure.
Which is that, you know, it is about words. It is about semantics, but the way that we think and our thought patterns and the messages that we deliver are really dictated by the format of language. So the reason I've made such a big point about this, even though at the end of the day my position's really probably not very different from yours, is that I think that language matters and ideas matters, and we need to be careful about how we use our words.
I think, you know, I do agree with you on that point. I just disagree about how we got to that point. I think we agree on the end result is that we want no one to be busted or arrested or harassed or discriminated against for their cannabis use. But when you say that words and ideas matter, that's where I point to the problem of calling it all wellness or all medical when obviously it cannot be. When there's a doctor in a tent at a rap show with a stethoscope around his neck pretending to take someone's vital signs, that's obviously not medical to any casual observer who would see that. So I see the framing here by trying to say all use is medical or all use is wellness could be problematic by painting us into a corner by which our opponents can point at a Cheech and Chong movie and go, well, where's the wellness there?
Yeah, well, you know, you and I have been disagreeing about this for a while, and I actually think that's a really good thing. When I started out in this movement, you know, there are so few of us, you could put us in one good-sized room.
That's true.
And, you know, we could figure out what we all agreed on and come up with a unified strategy pretty easy. But now we're a much larger movement, and we're a mature movement. We have many more tools in our tool chest of strategies. And there's a lot of different things, ways to go. There's lowest priority. There's repeal. There's medical. There's a lot of options. And you know what? I can't think of any single initiative that's on the ballot anywhere in the United States where I wouldn't feel perfectly happy going in and pulling that lever in favor of it. You know, it's not whether we agree 100% every single time with a particular measure or a particular approach. We have to ask ourselves, is this going in the right direction? And if so, Let's support each other. You know what? If somebody gets a legalization for recreational purposes initiative on the ballot, I'm going to go and I'm going to vote for it, just like I voted for Prop 19.
Fantastic.
And likewise, if we get a regulate medical cannabis initiative on the ballot, I would hope that people who are more oriented towards a recreational cannabis approach would also support that measure. Let's support each other. Let's use all of the strategies in our toolbox.
Yeah, I want to compliment you and commend you on all the work you've done over time. And I believe that the vast majority of what we're talking about, we agree on in certain ways. So again, we find the common ground and we work toward that common goal. I think we'll all be better for it. I did want to address a couple of other subjects. I know your time is limited, and I'd originally set this for 15 minutes. If you have a little time, maybe 5 or 10, I have a couple other questions if you'd like to go
sure,
over it.
Go ahead.
Okay. We've seen some pretty bad stories coming out of California. Oaksterdam, of course, being raided, and Richard Lee, stepping aside. Berkeley Patients Group closing its doors, and of course, these IRS tax on Harborside. So, what is the future specifically of Harborside and for yourself? Is this attack bowing you in any way, or what are your new plans going forward?
We made a commitment when we opened our doors 6 years ago to serve our patients with the very best selection of cannabis in the most safest way that we knew how. And we're going to continue doing that every single day that we possibly can, unless and until the federal government comes and padlocks our doors. And after they do that, we'll be back to pick the locks. We are not going to stop serving patients. We are not going to stop advocating for the truth about cannabis. I have dedicated my life to this cause, and I'm in it to win it. I will not stop until we get there.
Well, aside from us both having a nice collection of hats and ties, we both agree on that as well. I'm not going to stop either, Stevie, and I appreciate you. That's fantastic. Let's talk about another thing here. California, unfortunately, this year does not have a legalization initiative that made the ballot. Do you have any insight on what happened after Prop 19 and why there was a failure to coalesce around a common legalization effort?
I think that there were a lot of different approaches. I'm not convinced that any of those approaches would have been successful, even if everybody had gotten behind them, simply for reasons of money. California is a very, very difficult state to launch an initiative, and any initiative on any subject needs somewhere between $10 and $20 million to effectively compete at the ballot box. That is the only way that we won Prop 215, was by getting very significant, large donors to come in with money and help make it happen. None of those donors were willing to consider any measure in California whatsoever of any type. And I think that was the real reason that you didn't see an initiative on the ballot in California, because none of the large donors were willing to put the money there. Instead, they've put money into smaller states where a smaller investment of money has a higher likelihood of success, places like Arizona and Washington State.
Sure. Looking back to when the DEA locked up Mark Emery, one of the statements that came out said, well, there's one less pot of money for the legalization movement. Do you think that's a political motivation behind going after Oaksterdam and BPG and Harborside?
Oh, no doubt. When the U.S. attorneys announced this campaign several months ago, they said we're going after criminals and profiteers who are using the medical cannabis laws as a shield for criminal activity. In fact, if you look at the victims of their attack, it reads like an honor roll of the medical cannabis industry.
Yeah.
People like Matt Cohen and Lynette Shaw,
yeah,
and Berkeley Patients Group. It's just an outrage. They are clearly targeting the most legitimate and outspoken advocates of medical cannabis.
Yeah. You'd think if they wanted to show that medical cannabis were such a bad thing, they'd go after the ramshackle, set up shop that, would be the worst example to try to make us look bad. No, they go after the ones that make us look good. the ones that have the nice storefronts and check IDs and have security of all the transactions and all that. It's just maddening. How has this affected you personally, Stevie? I mean, you got to be losing sleep over this, or does the cannabis help, I suppose?
Well, I have to say that my consumption of edible cannabis has gone up rather markedly in recent months.
No doubt. Well, folks, check out Stevie D'Angelo this, I guess it's Saturday, right? The 5th?
Yeah, well, this Friday at Plummer Park, 2 p.m., and this Saturday, 1 p.m. at the W Hotel.
Yeah, the 280E seminar, which is very important. We got to get, you know, our strategy together on dealing with these tax laws, because this is how they want to play ball. They don't want to have the big photo op raid where there's going to be 100 or 200 people showing up to protest and guys in wheelchairs getting pushed over. That's bad PR on the TV. They want to take it in these boring IRS tax courts and behind the scenes landlord letters, sneaky, despicable ways to try to undermine medical marijuana, but they're not going to succeed because folks like Steve D'Angelo is out there working hard to keep this thing going. And Steve, thank you so much for being on the show. I appreciate you being here, and I look forward to seeing you next time.
All right, Russ, anytime. Thanks so much for having me. Great talking to you, my man.
And when we come back, we'll have a little time to wrap things up here on Normal Show Live and take a look at the chat room. I was so engrossed in the conversation, I didn't see what y'all were saying. So take a look at that when we come back right here on Normal Show Live.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What's up, guys? I'm Rory from Revolution, chilling at the Spring Fest, San Bernardino, California. Just chilling at the Normal Live. Want to say what's up and keep it green.
Marijuana and alcohol are the two most popular recreational drugs in America. Marijuana smoking is non-toxic, relatively safe, and has a low risk of dependence. Alcohol drinking is potentially fatal, dangerous to society, and is quite addictive. Marijuana is safer, so why are we driving people to drink? That's the question of the new book, Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? By Paul Armentano, Mason Tvert, and Steve Fox. Visit Amazon.com or ChelseaGreen.com today to order your copy of Marijuana is Safer, or visit MarijuanaIsSafer.com.
Warning, Neil deGrasse Tyson may grab you off the street at any minute.
I know that the molecules in my body are traceable to phenomenon in the cosmos that makes me want to grab people in the street and say, have you heard this?
This is Normal Show Live.
Yeah, I can trace the atoms in me right now. Welcome back to Normal Show Live here, hanging out with Wiz Khalifa over on mic too. How you doing?
Aloha, doing quite well, man. That was a great interview.
Yeah, I'll bring Cannabis Carrie and Kyle are also out there. I don't know. I wasn't on the chat room. I'm going to have to take a look and see what folks were saying, but maybe you can catch me up, Carrie.
I'm not actually logged in, but I did see people were praising your interview skills. Some of them wanted some more specifics. I think a few people wanted you to press him just a tiny bit harder.
Yeah,
but I think you did a great job. I think Steve did a great job, too. Good for him.
It was one of those things. I've been thinking about it all day, this interview, and I had to keep telling myself, you're interviewing, not debating. You're interviewing, not debating. You're interviewing, not debating. But they're like,
did a great job. No, and you know, he said what I wanted to hear, though, is that there is no excuse for locking anybody up for any use of marijuana of any sort.
Right.
But he still is having the semantic argument about wellness versus recreation. And, you know, but I thought you brought up a great point, even though it wasn't really debating. That was just about, you know, what are tobacco and alcohol users, if not recreational or medical users?
Right. So they're ingesting. Well, okay. You can say that with tobacco. With alcohol, when they're ingesting, you can't deny they're getting something out of it. I mean, and when you look at our commercials and our landscape and how much we promote the high life, grab some buds. And I guess you could say, well, the alcohol is what they do. And then you see them in the commercial recreating, playing pool or playing football or whatever it might be. But come on, there's Joe Sixpack, who after he gets off work, he goes and grabs a six pack of beer to sit in front of the couch and recreate. He's trying to get a buzz on. He's trying to take off, you know, whatever. He's trying to have a good time. He's trying to have fun. Now, the other side of that is to say, well, yes, having a good time, though, is wellness.
Right.
We have to relax. We have to reduce stress. I mean, Willie Nelson once said, you know, stress is the biggest killer out there, you know, and marijuana relieves stress. Mm-hmm. So, yes, that's wellness. Yes. And this is where it gets murky, because there's a lot of good in, there's a lot of very positive framing in what's going on there. The case is resting it on the legal part of it. You were saying something about this being a cultural argument, not a legal argument.
Right. Well, I agree with him on the idea that we should change the way we view marijuana, you know, that we should make a little go a little bit farther, that people just shouldn't be, you know, we shouldn't have that counterpart to the guy getting binge drunk. You know, I'm fine with having that cultural argument, but I'm just saying that's not going to fly when we take that to the legislatures. That's not going to fly when we go to the Obama administration, ask him to reschedule it. You know, we have to have some kind of a legal framework that says that, you know, people are able to use this. And then let's argue about how we use it and whether we're using it to an abusive point.
And for me, I would go to, you know, when I took him to the, you know, what is alcohol and tobacco? Well, if they're not recreation and they're not wellness, what are they? Well, they're just ingestion. Well, exactly. That's all the argument you need. All use is none. Right. That's all you need. Right. If we already have it set that we can ingest things that are poisonous and addictive, right, then we already won the argument that we can ingest something that gives us wellness.
That's the key of everything. It's the personal right to ingest what you want as long as you're not harming anyone else.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, if you're going to ingest alcohol and then go out and drive and kill somebody, you're going to get in trouble for going out and having your alcohol cause harm to someone else. But you're not going to get charged for drinking in your own house and hanging out, mm-hmm, or drinking and going for a walk, as long as you're not drinking while walking.
Right. And the issue with, you know, I use it for my wellness is, well, if someone isn't using it for their wellness, what do we do? Do we do something to them? Do we not? I mean,
because he says nobody should be locked up in a cage. So at that point, do we have to lock somebody up in a cage because
they're not using it for wellness? Right. And if not, then it's a distinction without a difference.
Absolutely.
Right? It's like, well, if we don't do anything to people that misuse it, and we don't do anything to people that use it properly, then there's no difference between those people. So why bother arguing that there has to be, you know, why right, arguing there's a difference, right? If we don't lock up alcoholics, then there's no reason to lock up pot smokers, no matter how they're using it. So, yeah, anyway. But I also didn't want to belabor the point, too, because if you want to get the point on this, I've written thousands of words on it. And Stevie's written thousands of words on it.
And I've spoken thousands of words.
And spoken, both of us. And you know, go over both of our respective histories on, you know, it's all out there on the net. And that's the nice thing about this, too. And I really appreciate how he said that, you know, it used to be you could get, you know, all of the major activists in one room. And, you know, they're pretty easy to form a cohesive strategy. Hey, stop locking us up. You know, pretty cohesive strategy. Now we are so big and diverse that we have, you know, it's like almost being a political party.
Yeah.
Where, you know, there's Blue Dog Democrats and there's Liberal Democrats and Progressive Democrats, and Conservative Democrats. And there's Republicans who are pro-choice, pro-life Republicans, gay Republicans, conservative Republicans, Christian evangelical Republicans. I mean, we're almost like a political party now.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, that goes true with any kind of social movement or any kind of political movement, which is what we are. I mean, once you start building to a critical mass, then you do. It's a much bigger umbrella, much bigger tent, more people are involved. And then, so yeah, you have to have those inner squabblings and you have those differences that can change the course of where you're going.
Yeah. And again, also remember that the discussions that we have here in the tent are the natterings of ants as far as the rest of the world is concerned. They just see a marijuana movement, right? They just see just marijuana guys, right? Yep. They don't note that there's distinctions. They just think we all want to legalize it and we're all nuts. Right. So that's fine, man. That's great that we're having this internal discussion, and we'll take it into hour two here in Toker Talk Radio. You can get into the phone lines at 971-533-7111. What did you think of the Stevie interview? Do you have any things you want to say to Steve D'Angelo? Someone in the chat room asked if he likes to be called Stevie. I don't know. And if he doesn't, I apologize. I've heard that said. I've heard people call him Stevie before. I assumed I could. I apologize if that was rude.
It's like being called, think about it. Yeah.
Maybe to him, it's like a Radical Rick thing. You know, yeah. Maybe, no, you know, yeah, I don't know.
He's putting marks on the wall as he goes home every night. God damn it. Call me Stevie again.
So stay tuned for Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. Your phone calls are coming in at 971-533-7111. Also, I've got a couple other stories to go over. Oh, my God. Story out of Colorado on the 5-nanogram DUID.
Pushing more stuff through.
A story on Oregon. Our first federal prosecution of medical marijuana growers here in the state of Oregon has revealed some evidence.
Some pretty big evidence,
God.
Huh?
God. So we'll talk about that in hour two and take your calls at 971-533-7111. 7111. For Wiz Coolico and Cannabis Carry, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the Marijuana Nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.
You're listening to the Normal Network.